I'm Jamal, and you're listening to Guess in the Mecha, your weekly anime and manga analysis podcast. From inspiring arcs to game-changing cinematography, I'm on a journey to try and make sense of it all, episode by episode. Enjoy the show. We finally made it. Episode 100. Welcome back to Guess in the Mecha. I'm Jamal today, and as I said, we're going to be talking about the end of Evangelion. It's been a long time coming, and I've planned this for a while, but I thought that it would be a good idea to do it on episode 100, considering how related to Evangelion this podcast is, even though it isn't, say, an Evangelion podcast. But I thought it would be worth the hype and saving it for something like this and then doing a two-parter. So in today's episode, I'm not going to waste too much time and I'll do most of the talking towards the end. And in part two, I'm going to be digging right into the end of Evangelion, really. This is a film that's very special to me, and it's a pretty special film, I think, to anime, to be honest. So let's dive into all of that. Here is the episode for this week. I can finally flex and say episode 100, part 1 of the show, a look into Neon Genesis Evangelion, the end of Evangelion. As I said before, I feel like this is a very special movie for anime as a whole. Outside of perhaps the Ghibli collection and things like Akira, I can't think of many anime movies that are this iconic, and I'm probably missing out on something really obvious, and I'll get a comment saying yes, there are things that are more iconic than EOE, but I feel like this is an extremely relevant film to the space of anime, mostly because of what it does and how visceral it really is, how violent it is. And it goes from being a pretty, I don't say tame mecha anime, this was never a tame show. Evangelion was never that. It goes from that to being a very violent and extremely violent and very brutal mecha anime that questions the human existence and so forth. By the way, I don't want anyone to think, and I should just say this now while we're on part one, that I don't want you to take that and think that I'm calling the end of Evangelion some sort of deconstruction. That's a very loaded technical term that I refuse to use, because that simply is not applicable to the end of Evangelion. That's another story for another day and another podcast for another day, but I just want to make that clear. I'm not calling the end of Evangelion by virtue of it being violent and ripping apart a lot of what Anno and So build in this anime. That doesn't mean it's perhaps a deconstruction. But that out of the way, let's actually dive into this film. Just to double down and make sure everyone's on the same page, this episode will, one, have spoilers for the end of Evangelion, and secondly, this will cover the first part of the film, so the quote-unquote first episode, episode 25, which it says to replace, or at least substitutes. So that's basically everything before the credits, and I say that because what's funny about EOE is that the credits are in the middle of the film and not the end, which I think is incredibly beneficial because it makes the end that extra bit more dramatic. It just cuts off right there. But let's talk about part one for now. This film features storyboards, of course, from Hideaki Anno, but it also features boards from Shinji Higuchi, as well as Kikuchi Hadame and Masayuki, as well as Kazuya Suramaki, who also is credited as director for this film alongside Hideaki Anno. However, for the first part, the storyboard credits go to Higuchi, Masayuki, and Suramaki. So for a bit of context on the end of Evangelion, it really puts the viewer into a rather uncomfortable position, an uncomfortable seat where we see the majority of the protagonists lose pretty much. And I think this, I don't want to make it like EOE is exclusively the only anime that does this, but I think it's very shocking for both Evangelion viewers and anime viewers in general. We see people lose all the time in anime. This isn't exclusive to Evangelion, and nor is it just a novel concept. But I think it's more so the extent and the brutality of it which makes it such an engaging film to see our characters being almost ripped to shreds by everything that's going on in the current moment, and seeing them quite literally lose their minds as they reach this final stage, which is fighting Sailor's human army. The movie begins with this unusual and perhaps unhealthy sense of tension, where the characters are in these rather depressive and low states. They've kind of reached an all-time low, and you can really feel that at the beginning where when some of the characters are having a bit of a coffee meeting. It's not really a coffee meeting, but it's more so waiting for whatever is going to come for them. And we'll talk how that's done on the technical level throughout this episode, but the way it starts is incredible. It comes right from episode 24, really, where things are so-called over, but what does it mean for things to be over? And I think the scary part of the end of Evangelion is finding out exactly what that is and knowing that it was much more than they bargained for. It's going to be quite difficult to talk about everything that happens in a 40-minute stretch, because these are kind of like two extended episodes, you could argue, as well as it being a film. But I'm going to try and talk about some key ideas that kind of encapsulate a lot of what this film is about and what it tries to say, and hopefully that will fill most of the gaps that I do leave. The first thing that I'm immediately drawn to when it comes to this movie, and every time I think of it, is how it tackles the notion of humanity, the depictions of humanity and its debate on what humanity really is or its nature. Evangelion has really tried to explore what it means to be human, you could argue, but also the power that humans hold against each other, and when they're around each other, how do they interact and how do they manage to live with each other? How do they manage to coexist when the fundamental issue with humanity, according to Ritsuko's citation of the Hedgehog Dilemma, is that they hurt each other when they when they come close to each other, and the eternal debate or the eternal challenge of being a human is managing to not hurt each other but still gain some sort of warmth by being close to each other. Perhaps the difference for me between part one and part two is that part one, it gives us a lot of questions and things to think about, but not a lot of answers, or at least it doesn't deliver a completely tangible message. It's very much for us to decide and to make our minds about everything from the beginning of the film. You know what I'm talking about. I'm not going to show that on screen. The Shinji moment at the beginning in the hospital, to Misato and Shinji's final interaction, to the interaction between Gendo and Rei, and Gendo and Ritsuko. It's all very up for question and blurred, which is why, again, we get into this whole thing on morality and these blurred lines as to what it means to be human and so on. We see people do bad things throughout this entire series, and that there's an infinite list. Gendo is half of that list. We see some bad things happen, for sure, but I think Iwi makes it incredibly more real when we see people, well, soldiers, quite literally patrol and storm Nerve HQ and mowing down people. It's incredibly violent and really real as to this is how humans can be, this is how humans interact. They interact through different ways, through touch, through much more physical activities, through dialogue, but seeing it through violence is very different to what we've seen throughout the series, which is Eva versus Angel, or humans versus angels. There's this disconnect between the so-called species or just type of things, even though they also have their own connection, as Misato mentions. But it's really hard to watch in seeing humans actually take on humans face to face, and something that's been quite absent from Eva for the most part, besides maybe the few encounters that Shinji had at school and with Asuka. I just want to keep talking about Sailor's Army because I feel like this is something that I really dismissed on my first watch, or at least I didn't give it enough attention. And it's just how, again, we're seeing how disconnected humans can be from one another, where they feel like the way to solve their issues is to take each other out, ensure that the other person can't exist, rather than thinking and debating this whole thing on coexistence, it's a very brutal answer to the question of the Hedgehog Dilemma. How do we coexist? What if we just never existed at all? Or at least we make sure that one person doesn't exist and therefore we can't get hurt. And I feel like there's a much deeper metaphor that underpins that part of the movie, or at least that first about quarter of the film with the whole raid going on in Nerve HQ. What also really resonated with me in this larger debate around humanity is the way that Misato spoke about how humans are essentially the final angels. And even though that is scientifically true in the world of Evangelion, I feel like it says a lot about what humans are. And it goes down to that thing on blurring the lines between human and something else that we don't really understand. And humans essentially can be understood as, well, if we perceive the angels as monsters, are humans simply another part of that long line of monsters? And that kind of, if we go another level deeper, I love getting into the layers of Evangelion here. It's how essentially we are our worst enemy in this whole Hedgehog Dilemma thing. It kind of feeds back into the point, or it feeds back into the fundamental basis of the Hedgehog Dilemma. It's two hedgehogs trying to be close to each other, but we think our enemies are each other, but perhaps they're, or at least something else. There's something perhaps obstructing the hedgehogs, but no, we, us, ourselves, humans, are the true problem in it all. We can go another level deeper and talk about Shinji's state of mind and how that reinforces that idea that ourselves are, I don't want to cast the blame on Shinji himself and say that Shinji is the problem in all his problems, but it's more so that the battle within himself and that monster within him is the one which he has to fight. Humanity is the monster. Monster sounds incredibly dramatic, like it's this it's this thing that's attempting to do evil all the time, but no, the monster is in plain sight and it does very normal things. And that's the thing we have to battle with, and something that Iowe kind of mentions that kind of gets into part two, but how Shinji has to keep living to address his own situation and himself. He has to battle himself and his own urges to continue not living. I kind of did a lot of dilly-dallying there, but I would just say in summary that I think our inability to connect with our fellow man is the wider issue in the end of Evangelion. And we reach a point to which we force ourselves to not connect, and the army is a great metaphor for this, and the whole thing on us being angels also is another great metaphor for how we as people have that fundamental problem too. It's a bit messy because I don't think it comes from the perspective of someone like Hideaki Anno trying to call humans all monsters and evil. I don't think monster and evil are the same thing. But in this case, I think it's more so that this also does get into part two, but I might as well mention it now. It's how we create our own narratives, our own reality. And unfortunately, we're the only ones that get in the way of that. And that is the inherent flaw of humans, and Shinji's just a case study in this all. Let's talk a bit more about some technical stuff, what we always do on this podcast. And I think we can't escape humanity in this anime, because it is everywhere. Humanity and reality are the probably two core things, I would say, that are explored in Evangelion. And everything kind of relates back to it. And this is also done through animation as well, and visually it's the same thing. I go back to the very famous Mitsuo Iso scene in which Asuka is fighting one of the mass-produced Evangelion, and it looks beautiful. Everyone talks about this scene when they talk about the end of Evangelion. I know I'm not saying anything unique, but I just had to mention it. It's one of the most iconic fights, potentially, in the space of anime. Iso's sense of weight and these animalistic, feral actions, I think creating those in animation is an incredibly massive achievement. But I also think, and for this podcast, what I think is more necessary to mention is how that feeds into this discourse of humanity. And it, we go back to how it's always blurring the lines and that gray area, which I think a lot of part one is really based in, that murky place between beast and human, and or just beast and robot. It's funny because at the, okay, perhaps not the beginning of Evangelion, but for a lot of the series, you view the Evas as robots. And although obviously there are hints throughout the series that eventually lead to you thinking that they're much more than just robots, but their nature is up for question. But we finally see, I think in this Iso scene, a incredibly different side to the Evangelion, which is a monster, as I said before, a beast, something that simply is more than just a robot with a mind of its own. This also feeds into this long-running discussion about humanity, but also just beings in general, and how they connect with each other through touch, through the exchange of words, through ideas, and we see it through combat as well, through fighting. That is also part of the general violent imagery within this anime as a whole, and this is just a really great showcase of that. I think it's important to remember how a lot of themes are communicated through animation as much as they are through dialogue, and that's something that I maybe have a bit of a problem with a lot of discussion around certain things. It isn't that I don't dislike how people talk about anime, don't get me wrong, I'm not being some sort of purist here. I just mean that I think there could be a lot more exploration around how animation conveys certain messages that are embedded within the anime, besides just what the characters say, because it's so much more than what the characters say, it's how they move, which communicates the same thing as well. So I just wanted to throw that out there, that dialogue is probably just as important, animation and direction and the technical stuff is just as important as the dialogue stuff when it comes to communicating Eva's very deep messages. On the direction side of things, part one is still very Anno-ish in many respects. I know he isn't particularly, or at least I don't believe he's credited for storyboarding, even though he does. He is credited for episode direction, so essentially a supervisory role over the storyboards in this part of the movie. So even if it's not boarded by him, he is still series director. He does have input as well as supervising a lot of these storyboards as well. But generally, this film still falls into a lot of those conventional Hideaki Anno conventions. This is something that I love about Anno and Anno-inspired directors. And in general, and just something I love about Evangelion is how I love the focus that's given to the surroundings, the mechanical imagery. And this is something we also in the rebuilds as well, where you have all the imagery of like the lampposts and everything around it. It feels very sterile, but in a good way. It feels very, I didn't really know the word, but it just feels very cold and uninviting, which is exactly the vibe I get from a place called Tokyo 3. The focus given to the surroundings in this movie, I would say it feels much more enhanced than the main series. Maybe because a lot of the main series does take place outside, obviously fighting angels, but I love how closed off and perhaps claustrophobic this film feels, even though that's also very ironic because this does take place in one quite a big city relatively, and also Nerve HQ is also massive too, but weirdly enough it feels very closed off and very roomy. Tokyo 3, Nerve, and everything just feels like a character in itself. I love the way we cut to all these innocent, quote-unquote innocent things, like when we cut to these ripples going through the LCL on the bottom floor where Rei and Gendo are, and the same kind of goes for these other moments as well, like Shinji obviously laying down, that's a classic Evangelion thing to be honest, but then other stuff as well, like seeing Rei in her house, and we cut to Gendo's glasses and then she just leaves the room. There's no focus on everything she's doing to get there, but it's just very ambient and passive, which we usually expect from Anno. I love how much of Nerve HQ is showed off in this film when we see the army, it's Fei-Lei's army, marching through it, as well as seeing Shinji in the car park and seeing inside of Maggie some more as well. This, it's just very fleshed out and gives us a really nice reminder of what this place looks like and how cramped it kind of is, even though it's really big. I think we can also put that back into the whole metaphor on human connection and how we're very close, even though we might even be quite far away, and it's managing that. Something that feels very distant is in fact very closed off and very intimate. The reason why I really appreciate this is because it simply enhances the visceral, brutal, and violent imagery of the end of Evangelion. And it's constantly switching between very calm states and very chaotic moments. Acts 2 is probably the most chaotic and maybe one of the most chaotic 40 minutes I've seen in anime, just to be quite nice about it. But it simply wouldn't have the same effect if it wasn't for Act 1 or Episode 25, which is constantly testing our expectations and testing the viewer, honestly. There's quite this eerie, mellow feeling throughout the entire film where we get these lengthy absences of non-diegetic sound and we're simply just waiting for whatever is going to come next. It honestly feels like we're being teased a bit and our patience is kind of being tested. And then out of nowhere, something really crazy happens and we have to deal with it right then on the spot. It's able to move so seamlessly between this false sense of calm and security and just straight up tension to complete and blatant chaos until the two are forced to come together. And that really happens at the end of the film, the iconic screaming scene where there is no calm anymore. There is no ability to be calm in a situation like this. And by the end of the film, we're forced into chaos. We're forced into the unknown, which a lot of the second episode of this two-parter really explores. I know this episode has been full of me talking about metaphors and Evangelion's perhaps visual metaphors and written metaphors. And funny enough, I also came up with a bit of a metaphor myself to describe Evangelion, or at least a simile, to describe Evangelion's sort of direction and how I feel like it goes. And I like to think of the directors pushing us on a swing for the majority of this first half, in how the majority of the movie, well, for the majority of the movie, this is what it feels like, and how as soon as we get used to the calm, we're flung right back into chaos. Once you get comfortable swinging on the back half of the swing, you're then forced to go to the front again. And just when you get used to the chaotic feeling, it swings right back into calm. And that really just messes you up for the entire film. And I mean that in a good way. I know also throughout this Evangelion series, I said a lot of things were perhaps disturbing and they felt weird and often uncomfortable, but I meant those all in a good way. And the same with this film as well. There are a lot of things that feel very weird and uncomfortable, but that is what makes Evangelion such a beautiful anime. I don't think you ever truly feel like this is a nice moment, because you know that the next moment is going to completely, perhaps you could say ruin, or at least bulldoze a lot of those memories and fun moments in there. It's kind of how I feel about episode 9. Episode 9 is really nice. And its conclusion is just stellar. But then you come to the end of Evangelion and it's like, what was it worth? And that is just something really beautiful about Eva. It's able to knock down what it builds so quickly to the point to which you question why said thing was built. But that was a bit of a tangent. I was just trying to say how Eva moves from these states of calm and chaos very easily. We also have times where we have these forced moments of calm and chaos, and these are probably the most impactful parts of the movie. The forced chaos being obviously the screaming scene with Shinji, knowing what happened to Asuka, and him just in the crazy mode that Evo 1 is in. And then the forced, almost calm, I would say, would be Asuka's moment, where she's almost forced into submission by the manufactured Evo series, when we see the Lance of Longinus just go right through her, also just part of that incredible brutal imagery. And then also when you see all the other things come at her as well, and the Evas too, and that lovely, lovely blue screen, it's just straight on, nice wide shot, and it's probably one of the most iconic frames in this film, I would say. These binaries are so powerful, and I think it even mixes up the discourse on the Hedgehog Dilemma quite a lot, where we view, I wish I was able to come with some sort of image for narrating the Hedgehog Dilemma, but I simply don't have the time to do that, I don't think. But I think we assume that the Hedgehog Dilemma comes with the choice of being able to interact or not interact. But what if we're forced to not interact? How do we interact then? Or what do we do when we're forced to connect with other things? How do we do that? And Iwi just makes that debate much more complex, and something that I think a lot of this series does, in how it presents us with a dilemma, yes, and one that you is already complex in itself. How do you hurt someone when your spikes are a defense mechanism in part to hurt other things? How do you not hurt someone? That's obviously the question, and I'm not really answering it, but you get what I'm trying to say. But then you have this whole situation of how do you manage to get around this when you have other things in play? And I think this kind of just, in summary, says that the whole thing on human connection is not easy. It's not as easy as just finding ways not to hurt each other, because there are all these other things in the equation that make it incredibly hard, and that is unfortunately what life is about. But part two then goes on to say how we manage to explore this, and that is through continuing to live, which we will cover in the next episode. Overall, I would say the first act of the end of Evangelion is relatively tame versus the second, which is another level. And I thought that this movie wouldn't be able to go to another level, but it just does. But even so, it's an incredible display of the directorial talent on Anno's team. It's beautifully unpredictable and frightening all at the same time, where you're scrambled into this feeling of disarray and you don't really know what is to come. And then part two comes and you thought you kind of was getting used to this movie, but you don't. And I don't think there are many filmmakers that are really able to pull this off besides Hideaki Anno, in all honesty. There are so many filmmakers I love in the anime space, and I'm sure you guys know that, but Hideaki Anno just has that zing, that talent to turn something completely upside down, and you start to question everything that came before it. Why did it exist? But I would say the simple answer to that is that the reason why we create calm is to make chaos feel more impactful. And you have to build a city in order to destroy a city. And that is exactly what I think that's a really, if I had smart titles for this podcast, that is totally what I would call this podcast. That line exactly. But yeah, you have to be able to build a city in order to destroy it. And Anno does exactly that. He builds the Hedgehog Dilemma, and he throws all the things that make it much more complicated, being forced to disconnect, being forced to connect, forced into instrumentality. He also, of course, builds Nerve and all these other personalities and so on, and throws in all their problems. And he obviously presents us with Shinji, the case study for a lot of this show, this boy that isn't quite a teenager but not quite a child, and how he navigates the world. And then he kind of takes all of that, and Shinji is still the core of this, but he manages to rip everything around him down and tests the character even more and pushes the limits of it. And so that is probably where we will end this podcast for this week. I really did enjoy talking about this first half, and I know I did go in a few circles, I'm going to be honest, but I think this will become much more worth it, and we'll come back to some of these themes in the next episode in part two. It's a bit hard talking about part one alone without seeing how this impacts the rest of the movie, but I think it will, again, it will become worth it. So I don't want to talk too much about 100 episodes. Thank you so much, obviously. I don't want to sound ungrateful here because I'm incredibly grateful. Thank you for supporting this podcast for 100 episodes. Whether you have been listening for so long from episode one, whether you started listening quite recently in the past tens of episodes, whether you literally, this is your first time listening to Get the Mecha, or maybe it's your last. Okay, please don't let it be your last. But thank you so much. And I couldn't do it without anyone. We're still growing. We still have ways to go, I know. But I've thoroughly enjoyed doing every episode of this podcast. It's been hard. I've put a lot of time into it. I've put a lot of perhaps money into it too. But it's been such a great experience. And all those late nights editing and tweeting about how I'm going to finish editing here and all that has all been worth it for this, really. And just having a great time talking about anime. So that's where I'm going to leave with this podcast. Thank you for listening to Get in the Mecha episode 100 part 1. Part 2 is coming out next week, being part 2 of The End of Evangelion. So thank you for listening, have a great weekend, and I will see you in part 2. The music in this production goes as follows: Mandatory Overtime by Joth, and Synthwave by Alex McCulloch.